one and two. Higher scores is what you'll see. Supersonic will set you free. No wires. Supersonic.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Retronauts Pocket. I'm Ray Barnholt, and with me, just like last time, just the core crew today, we have Bob Mackey.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeremy Parrish.
Hi.
Hi. And, you know, with my series of Retronauts Pocket, I was thinking about it, and I thought for the next few episodes, I'll do a little series on accessories, you know, controllers and what have you, because it's not something we ever really talked about on the show before, and I kind of have a nice obsession with hardware, and I like looking at old sorts of controllers, game pads, guns, mats, other words, balls like the rock and roller.
Oh man, I want to talk about that.
Okay. Well, we can, because this, I thought I'd start with NES accessories. And, you know, there was many of them to talk about. But I thought maybe just as, like, you know, to drive the conversation, I thought about just, like, bringing up, like, a few. Although we can, you know, we can go anywhere with this, basically. I just cherry-picked a few different controllers. I don't think we'll talk about ROB too much because, you know, it was cool and it really, you know, helped make the NES what it was in America, or at least sell it to, you know, doubtful retailers. But it wasn't so much a controller as like a controller manipulator.
Right.
You know, it was just a goofy thing that you slotted it in and tried to, you know, use gyros to somehow manipulate the buttons and become your video pal. But I want to talk about the stuff that came after that, you know, the sort of cottage industries also that rose up about, like, crazy third-party controllers. You know, not just stuff that had turbo switches, but, you know, things that maybe, you know, went a little crazier. But anyway, I think I'll start with, like, the one big controller that everybody sort of remembered, and that is the NES Advantage, which was released by Nintendo of America. I believe it was designed by them in, like, 1987, when, like, America was at their height of NES mania. And so they had this arcade-style joystick, nice little ball-type joystick with the big buttons on it. It's weird because it sort of became, like, a nice... It has a nice legacy to it, and people remember it very, very fondly. Mm-hmm. Although, you know, it was really just designed or intended to be for, like, you know, really action-y games like shoot-em-ups and what have you. It's not something you'd really play Zelda 2 with, for example. It's also notable for controlling Statue of Liberty in Ghostbusters 2.
That was awesome.
Yes.
And they don't let you take those up there if you visit.
Yeah.
Because you could just plug it right in.
Yeah.
Did it have a metal base?
That's right, yeah.
I felt
weighted,
like,
metal base.
When I was a kid, I held it. I was like, I could bludgeon someone to death with this,
right,
if I wanted to. Like,
is that really how you thought as a kid?
Well, I mean, if I wanted it to be my turn, yes.
Mom! Murder!
Hey, I was raised by violent television, so...
Yeah, gotta turn off those Ninja Turtles, Bobby. So, yeah, had a weighted metal base, which is kind of... Now it's very typical of arcade sticks all over the place. But, yeah, that was, like, really one of the first of its kind to, you know, come up in the console world, at least over here. It was also notable for having, like, a dual plug on it. It would plug into both controller ports on the NES, and then you could have a switch between player 1 and 2, which doesn't seem too practical, really.
Mm.
I mean, why would they do that, necessarily? Was it, like, a thing where it needed extra power or something? I don't think that mystery was ever really figured out.
I think it was just to seduce parents by saying, look, you can have a controller for both players. You only buy one.
Yeah, the kids won't fight over it then. It's just like if you play like Mario Brothers, you can take turns with the controller instead of one kid getting the good one.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, it makes it a lot harder to play Smash TV.
Mm.
I mean, come on. Then you'd have to get the NES 4 score, the satellite, and then hook those in. That supported that, right? Just talking to myself, I'm sorry.
What about NES Max?
Yeah, the NES Max, that was... Okay, that has an interesting history because that was not really a Nintendo creation.
No,
that was developed by, or at least originally produced by, I think, Bulletproof Software, and released as like a Famicom controller. But also, that exact same form was an MSX controller released by Sony.
Wow, I was wondering how back the double grip controller design went.
Yeah, no, it's the exact same shape and everything, and so that eventually morphed into the NES Max again, manufactured or published, let's say, by Nintendo over here. Yes, Max has an odd reputation now, or always did.
Well, it for
has...
one, you can only control the Lincoln Memorial with it.
Yes. There you go.
Lame.
Where's our rimshot drop?
Yeah, the so-called cycloid controller.
Yeah, that's what it was called. That's right.
Yeah, that was, like, I guess it worked in theory, but the problem is most NES games were designed around, you know, digital cardinal controls.
Yeah. Well, it had this plastic rim, which was basically like a regular D-pad, but yeah, in the middle it had this free-moving cycloid disc thing.
Right, and yeah, I had a lot of trouble using it, especially, yeah, like, just for, you know, platformers and standard action games.
Yeah.
It didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I could never figure out how to properly use it when I originally had it.
I'd always be flipping into diagonals.
And I was too young. I was like,
right, you might know this. There was another controller out at the time that had a similarly bad D-pad. It kind of predicted the awful digital gamepads that would show up in iPhone games. It was a pad that it just sensed if your thumb was over it.
The TurboTouch 360.
Thank you. I didn't see it on here.
No, that was released in like 92.
Oh, so much later.
And that was like NES, Genesis, and Super NES.
Yeah. Got it, yeah.
I got like a Super NES one when it was like on clearance at Kmart or something.
Hmm.
And yeah, it was basically, yeah, like you said, like sort of like a virtual D-pad on iPhone now. It's just, you know, you touch and it goes there. And yeah, much like all of these really special controllers, they were marketed towards certain types of games. Basically, like the NES Advantage was more for shoot 'em ups, let's say. And like the Turbo Touch was supposed to be for fighting games, and that it would be so easy to use all these crazy Street Fighter commands, you know, just with a nice swish of your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it didn't quite work out that way.
Nope.
And the Max, I only ever really remember seeing advertised for like Blades of Steel and hockey, sports games, those types.
I mean, that's the thing, is that the disc never really controlled anything. It was really that rim on the side that actually used the digital input. It's just like, it's not
quite. Is that why it sucks so much?
Yeah. It's just a loose, pad. It's not like a 3DS circle pad or anything.
Mm.
It's really, I don't know why they thought
okay,
that
worked. Well, yeah. Now I understand.
Yeah.
Maybe people maybe there was concern over kids getting blisters from, you know, the deep. I first started playing video games, my fingers weren't used to that, so I would get, like, blisters and stuff.
Nintendinitis.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, that's what they called it. One of the other notable ones I thought was the Bandai Mega controller. I think this was one of the first ones that had, like, a memory function, because there were a couple of other controllers like that where you could, like, input commands, or it would rather record your inputs and then just sort of store it and then play it back.
Was there a limit to the length of a command chain?
I'm sure there was, because these were basically just calculators.
Yeah.
I think it was long enough that, you know, you could do almost anything.
Just imagine the Konami code, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
I imagine this is mostly used for cheat codes, right? Just to kind of plug it in ahead of time.
This was for the NES, of course, because is what we're mostly talking about. But later, those kind of controllers were, again, geared towards, like, fighting game players, because you could, like, if you were, you know, so fed up trying to do Zangief's 360 move, you'd at least try and pull it off once, then store it in the controller. But, like, there were not a lot of fighting games on NES at the time. So I'm looking at it, you know, I look at it and struggle to find a purpose for NES games except for, like, inputting passwords.
Well, you know, it's perfect for...
and other codes. Yeah.
Perfect for dudes who imported Joy Mecha Fight.
I suppose. Yeah, you're right. Don't forget the Tournament Fighters.
I was going to say, yeah.
And maybe even ER Kung Fu.
Right, Rise of the Robots? No, that didn't come out for NES.
No.
Came out for Game Boy, even better.
So, I mean, the memory thing was a standard function on this, and as well as, like, the turbo and slow-mo stuff that, like, so many other third-party controllers had. But it also had, like, extra modes on it. It had something called Arsenal Mode, which would limit the number of button presses you could do on a button. So you could pretend, like, for example, Mega Man only can fire, like, 16 shots at a time or something. That's his ammo.
What?
Yeah, it's like, it's weird sort of self-limiting thing. Like, if you are so burned out on a game and you are just so such a master at it, you could, like, start to create your own fun, basically. And that's what it did.
Well, that's yeah, we have that these days with people doing crazy runs of, like, no sword in Zelda and that kind of thing. I see.
Yeah. Except this is built in right in the controller.
Keeps you honest.
Yeah. And because it basically is just a calculator, it also has a little mini game in it, like a Brick Breaker game, I think, or some other sort of quiz thing. But yeah, that's the Bandai Mega, and there were other games like that. But I remember getting a Bandai Mega, and it was just like, I barely used it.
Hmm.
It was like, oh boy, I used up $30 a mom's money on this, and I'm not really using it. It has turbo, though. I guess that's cool. Did any of you guys have any experience with those sorts of command memory things? You ever see, like, a...
Not really, no. I mean, I knew of their existence, but I didn't actually get to play with one.
Did you at least Google a picture?
No, I didn't do that. Okay. I'm sorry.
I did Google a picture, yeah. And it looks cumbersome and awkward. My experience with third-party controllers or just anything besides the basic controllers that came in a game systems box has always been really bad. And so a very, very long time ago, I just stopped being interested in optional controllers. I've only ever used the standard controllers or, you know, the first party expansions, you know, like the DualShock for PlayStation.
Yeah.
So this is all kind of outside of my bailiwick.
I'm the same way. Like, I used to buy every, you know, unauthorized guide to NES games book. Right. And one of them had a really great section in the back that was like, we're going to review all this hardware. And the guy just made fun of everything. So I was like, I don't really need any of this. But he really hated the Rock and Roller, which I guess we'll talk about at some point.
Yeah, well, we can't right now. I mean,
okay, yeah. This is what it is, but he compared it to, like, you're standing on, like, an upset turtle while trying to play an NES game.
Was that one of those ones, like, Zach Meston contributed to? Because I know he used to do
that. You know what? He probably did. Yeah.
Maybe that was him, young Zach Messon, being snarky about those things. Like, a lot of this was just, like I said, around the time with like NES fervor in like late 80s when like everybody was just trying to make a buck on it. So like this is not a really controller, but there's also the speed board that people like to make fun of now on the internet, which is just like this plastic sort of ramp that you put the regular NES controller in and you just rested your palms on it. And it was supposed to be like, oh, you can access all your buttons just like this because you're resting your palms right on it. It's supposed to be extra speedy. It's the speed board.
But you're not using your thumbs, right?
Right.
Thumbs give us the advantages as a species. Yeah. We need to use our thumbs.
I had friends who played NES games without their thumbs. They would hold the system in kind of a claw grip.
Yeah. Mm. It's still useful today.
Claw grip.
Yeah. Again, it's useful in fighting games if you play on a gamepad. Yeah. People do that a lot. I do. Piano style, we call it. There was also a small contingency of wireless controllers for the NES. And these are some of the really first ones that I know of just in console gaming. And one of the first ones to bring us these things was Acclaim. Acclaim released something called a remote controller, really a wireless controller. It used infrared signal, put a receiver on the NES, and there you go, your wireless controller. The problem is that infrared-based control is really not that great, especially if you're doing something as complex as, say, playing a Nintendo game.
Yeah.
And also anything where you might be moving around and breaking the line of sight.
Yes.
It was very different than, you know, a Bluetooth connection because it was very much maintaining that direct connection.
Yeah. So, yeah, you basically could not move. If you just stand right in front of the thing and not move.
I know. I've been thinking, was the Nintendo WaveBird just the first wireless controller that worked?
Well,
mostly.
No.
I mean,
around that time, there were other companies that started using more like RF receivers.
Right.
And I think that's what the WaveBird was.
Yeah, it is radio.
Yeah, so. And then now everything is, Bluetooth mostly. And kids have it too good now, basically. The original remote controller from Acclaim, you know, it looked bad too. Just this more of a brick than even the original NES thing. Mm-hmm. It was just fatter on the bottom as well.
It was like they took an NES controller and made it really ugly. They even kept the same general design and decals and everything, but it was just crappy looking.
They sort of made a better version. They came out with the double player, which was two controllers. Now you have two wireless controllers. So I'm sure that doesn't create any mayhem. And, you know, it had a slightly better design. They were a little bit more thinner and, you know, more rounded, contoured. But still bad infrared controllers. But I had those. I had the double players, even though I didn't have a lot of people over to play Nintendo. But
that was less people to wander in front of you and break the signal, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for justifying my lonely existence.
I got to do it to myself, too.
Yeah. And actually, I was going to say, we were talking about how they were all sort of generally bad quality, but in Japan, we had companies like Hudson and Hori, especially. Hori always made very high quality controllers and stuff. They didn't always make like very practical ones all the time, but like Hori, who are still around, still makes really good stuff. And they started out basically on the Famicom era, and they made things like the Hori Commander, which was just a basic sort of replacement Famicom controller with turbo switches on it. Same thing with Hudson's Joy Card, just turbo switches, so you can be like Takashi Meijin. And then Hudson also made, they just called it the joystick. It was basically just a big base joystick thing. Nothing much remarkable about it, but they too tried to pitch it as like, you know, a speedier thing if you're playing Star Soldier. Again, you can be just like Takashi Meijin. And those are the sorts of controllers that, you know, are more remembered to like Japanese players. And the thing is that, you know, they are actually of a good build quality and they still last. And so, you know, not quite the same as these Acclaim controllers or the Bishu joysticks. Bishu is another company that made a lot of NES stuff, and it was just like these big plasticky joysticks as well and these bad controllers. And it's just like, they're featured in The Wizard, actually. In the video Armageddon scene, they had these big, stupid Bishu joysticks. Oh,
that's what those were. Okay.
Yeah, so the Bishu ones are like, it's a stick right in the middle of the base unit, and you have buttons on both sides of the stick.
Yeah, I'm like, getting what? I guess for the left-handed friends out there.
I guess
left-handed
so.
Friends.
Yeah, ambidextrous joysticks. it just looks ugly, though, and it was just badly made. And it's too bad. I remember also, like, there was a, I think it was Thrustmaster, whoever that company is. They made, like, a wing-shaped controller that was also meant for, like, you know, playing
games. Yeah, I remember that one.
It looks like handlebars, actually.
It has,
like, a little D-pad in the middle and then a big A button or whatever right next to it. And it's just like, I got that, too, because that was, I guess, going to be useful for actually nothing. I think I played it. I think I played 1942 with it once and really never again. The controller shapes is all just a crazy bit of this whole history. But I think also another one that people really remember is, of course, the Power Pad. And this is definitely not a gamepad. This is the exercise-focused mat from Nintendo. Although, originally it was the Bandai Family Trainer mat in Japan. And then Bandai tried to bring it over to America as the Family Fun Fitness Pad, but then it was quickly taken off market because Nintendo scooped up the license and then made it into the Power Pad. And so now the Bandai version, I guess the whole Power Pad sort of family, is relevant because the first game Bandai made for the Family Fun Fitness was Stadium Events and later World Class Track Meet from Nintendo. And then just a couple of years ago, a naive woman sold one for about $40,000 on eBay because Stadium Events was taken off market so quickly and they made so few of them that it just became this huge, like, holy grail for a lot of collectors. And so once this naive woman sold her thing, it sparked a new fervor amongst the collectors for any sort of version of Stadium Events that they can find and put up. Like, is it filthy? Is it wrapped, unwrapped? Who knows? Just put it up on eBay because we need to make some cash right now. So that was a nice little bit of time in the collector world a couple years ago. And it's all thanks to the Power Pad. If you haven't seen a Power Pad, it's basically a Mylar sort of mat.
It's like a DDR mat, kind of, right?
Right. It is the precursor to that, with like a row of buttons on one side and another sort of formation of buttons on the other side. And you basically just use those to either select menu things or in-game just start to run in place, stomp on them, and try and make your guy in-game run or jump or what have you. And known also for tiring you out very quickly.
Yeah, it's like you have to go at sprint level when you're doing it, and that doesn't last very long.
Especially in world-class track meet, because it's all like long jumps and 100-meter dashes. And it's just like,
or if you're smart, you get down and you slap it with your hands.
Right. Well, yeah, there's always ways to cheat.
that's called fat kid mode.
Right, exactly. Yeah, not very active. I don't know, did you have any experience with it, Bob?
I didn't play it until much later when I dated a girl that had a Power Pad, so I was like 20.
I see.
And I didn't experience it as a kid. But as a kid, it looked really cool, and it probably, what I wanted it to do had nothing in relation to what it actually did. Sort of like with the Power Glove, which we'll talk about later, you know.
Right.
But I thought the idea of like actually making steps as a character and seeing the character make the same steps on the screen was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess that's why everybody likes virtual reality, or at least that in theory.
Jeremy, any thoughts? Do you ever see
one? None whatsoever.
Yeah, never saw one in the wild.
Nope.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like Nintendo tried to, they sold it separately, but they also made a giant NES bundle with it as well to try and make it like this big family fitness thing. And so, yeah, I think it was the Power Set is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Just a giant box, you know, Power Pad. You get the game. But because the Power Pad was a Bandai creation, they got a lot more games made for it in Japan than like the half dozen or so that came out in America. So they had all sorts of different sorts of marathon type games, other sorts of active games.
From watching Crontendo so much, I noticed that there were a ton of those side-scrolling marathon games.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if Dr. Sparkle were here for this episode, he could lament this entire thing.
Yeah, probably. they also made one based on Takeshi's Castle.
Oh, right.
That game show, which you may know as MXC, or maybe even now as Wipeout. I would say, though, that my killer app for the Power Pad is Short Order and Explode, which was a Nintendo release. And Explode is fun because you just have to, like, stomp out these bombs that are, you know, laid out on the main grid of the Power Pad, and you just, move around a bit more. You're not just stomping in place, and it's more of a skill-based game. Of course, there's also Dance Aerobics, which was another big Power Pad release for Nintendo, I guess.
Was that another precursor to DDR? Just, I don't know even how Wii the game Fit. Played. Oh, okay, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just basically you mimic the dance exercises that the woman on screen is doing in front of you. That is supposed to help your aerobics. What do you know? So I don't know if you guys have any other special controllers that popped into mind before I move on.
I'm a big fan of the Arkanoid controller for NES.
Oh, yes.
Even though it was made just for one game.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the fact that they actually released a little dial-based controller to play Arkanoid with.
Yeah, the Vouse.
Paddle, the Vouse, yeah.
Named after the paddle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it was nice, and I still have JC Fletcher's of Tiny Cartridge, and I need to send it back to him after like 3 years. Sorry, JC.
Yeah, they made one for the DS version as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got that set.
Yeah, that was really awesome until I switched to a DSi XL and no longer had the cartridge slot.
Mm. Well, still one of the better uses of that second slot.
Definitely. Yeah,
that's not game related, not putting in GBA games. I mean, and that was supported by a couple more games. I think at least Taito did. That you could use
Space Invaders Extreme supported it.
Yeah. But again, this is the NES we're mostly talking about, and you cannot talk about NES controllers and accessories without coming upon this next one, the Power Glove by Mattel.
Yeah.
Some people think it's a Nintendo creation, but it's not. It's made by Mattel, created originally by them, then released by a different company in Japan later, actually. So, I don't know. What else is there left to say about the Power Glove, really?
I mean, obviously the way it was advertised was much different than how it actually played, because I don't think kids understood that you had to be looking at your wrist like you're posing for a JCPenney catalog while you're playing your video games.
And that also you had to set up this frame, basically this triangular frame that would use it. It's like a sensor bar, basically. It's like the Wii sensor bar.
Right.
But you had to put it together and then hook it up above the TV. And
I mean, like with the U-Force, which I'm not sure if you do you want to talk about that too.
Oh yeah, sure. Okay.
Like they always showed it off with the only game it made sense with, and that was Mike Tyson's Punch Out.
Yes.
Because obviously that it's like sort of like a not one to one, but you know what I mean. It's like the closest thing to what you're doing is what's happening on the screen. Yeah. You know,
it's that whole problem of trying to adapt like binary input into like these analog based things where you're moving your hand freely. You can't really.
How really did it work? Because I've never actually used one. I'm sure my giant man hands today would not fit into a tiny Power Glove. I'm not sure how big it is, but I saw people playing like Ride Racer, and you turn your hand to steer. Like, how did that even work?
Yeah, that was the famous scene in The Wizard.
Okay, wonder. Was that all doctored or?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know.
Could you
actually do that?
Did they even have like the sensor set up in that movie?
I don't think so.
I'm supposed to see The Wizard Scholar. What am I doing? I can't remember that well. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing is that you could put in certain codes, button codes for games that would, you know, be pre-made for the glove and then you could use it that way. So I think it would sort of expect what you were going to do in those games in a way.
But then only two games were made with it in mind, and that was Super Power Glove.
That was the only one.
And what about Bad Street
Ball?
Oh, Bad Street Baller was U-Force then, right? Or...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Super Glove Ball, the only game made for the Power Glove by Rare. Not released in Japan, so if you bought a Japanese Power Glove, you were stuck trying to figure out all the other games to play with. I mean, Super Glove Ball, good concept to it. It was like a 3D sort of...
Kind of Klax-ish, wasn't it?
It looked like Klax. It played a bit like a handball, basically. Go figure. It was just like you bouncing balls off panels and stuff in this sort of this 3D tunnel-looking thing, like Klax or Weltris, what have you. Yeah, the U-Force as well. I remember playing that on like a live stream, one up with Frank Zifaldi, you know, trying to play like the one U-Force game that was being made for it, but never came out. It was like a series of mini games made by Tozei. But yeah, those didn't work well either with the U-Force, what the thing was designed for.
I think like the U-Force design of it did not indicate what it was supposed to do. Like the Power Glove was such an easy connection for kids in their minds, but the U-Force is just like my laptop that's open now. Just like I don't connect this with, you know...
It's like a holographic interface.
Yeah.
Float your hands over. It's just like being in a sci-fi movie.
And again, in the commercial, Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Yep.
He's own. I don't know how much lag there was on a U-Force, but if it's greater than the Wii or the Wii U, how it upscales games, you could not beat Mike Tyson with the U-Force, my friend.
Probably not, no. Definitely not through a Wii.
Either. Yeah. That's actually challenge mode. Try playing Mike Tyson's Punch-Out with the Wii U gamepad. It is a much harder game.
Oh, yeah.
Some would say impossible.
Hmm.
I think the difficulty of Punch-Out on an HDTV is not the the controller itself. It's the input lag on an LCD TV.
Right, but I'm talking about, like, you know, breaking the infrared streams and how long that would take for the signal to reach the sensor bar.
Yeah, so the U-Force basically created this infrared field in front of the panels, and you were...
Okay, I see what you're talking
about. Yeah, you put your hand in it, and it would break the fields, and that would tell it that that was the input.
Yeah, it's different than a video delay, but still, you could not...
It came within a handlebar attachment for, you know, driving games or what have you. You'd screw it in there, and then that would just sort of also properly disable the signals from whatever point that was. So
I want to know how much this damn thing... I don't know how much it was.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
It had to be up there, like $60 to $80.
It was
more than a game, I know that.
I know the Power Glove was around that range. Along those lines, there was also the Game Handler, which was just this free-floating stick that you grabbed onto. Okay. And it was supposed to, like, you were just supposed to, like, again, just move it in free space, and it was supposed to do the digital inputs.
And I know this is not on the topic of NES games, but I just thought it was funny that U-Force came out, was a spectacular failure, even, like, children knew it sucked.
Yeah.
And then the Genesis has the goddamn activator, like, learned nothing from anyone.
Well, you know, it's all about trying to see what else will hit technology. And it's like, yeah, okay, well, if we can make a profit, that'll be good. But yeah, the activator was the same concept, and I'm sure we'll talk about it later. But yeah, those are like quote unquote pillars of NES accessory dumb, and there's a lot more to talk about as well, but a lot more that we remember. But in terms of like certain technologies being used, and then also certain failures being reached, these are the ones I want to talk about the most. So sorry, Jeremy, that you didn't have a lot of experience with it, but
that's okay. I made you guys sit through the prog rock episode.
That's true. I was silent for that one pretty much. I think that'll do it for this episode of Retronauts Pocket. Thank you everybody for listening. Bob, I think I'll do the plugs this time.
Go for it.
You can find us all over the internet. We're Retronauts on pretty much everywhere. We're of course Twitter, Facebook, right? SoundCloud and
Tumblr.
Right.
Sorry.
Retronauts.com. Yeah, YouTube. Retronauts.tumblr. YouTube. Oh man. I should have trained. That's about it, though, right? I said everything. I said Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And, we're everywhere, of course. Retronauts.com, at least, is where you can find a lot of our stuff. I'm on Twitter, RDBAA. Bob?
I'm Bob Serbo, and also please review our episodes.
Oh, yes.
If you can.
That's right. We'll be on iTunes by now.
Yep.
So, yeah, please give us good reviews on iTunes. Be nice to us. It helps us get up there in the rankings a bit. Just keep listening as well. Jeremy, your Twitter?
GameSpite.
Yes. All right. Well, that was fun, doing my first hosting gigs on the show. I hope you enjoyed it, everyone, and I hope you look forward for more. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.